Chapter 18. Again, the Chairman. 75. The chairman was short, surprisingly short. Amadiro towered over him by nearly 30 centimeters. However, since most of his shortness was in his thighs, the chairman, when all were seated, was not noticeably inferior in height to the others. Indeed, he was thick-set with a massive chest and shoulders, and looked almost overpowering under those conditions. His head was large, too, but his face was lined and marked by age. Nor were its wrinkles the kindly type carved by laughter. They were impressed into his cheeks and forehead, one felt, by the exercise of power. His hair was white and sparse, and he was bald in the spot where the hairs would have met in a whorl. His voice suited him, deep and decisive. Age had robbed it of some of its timbre, perhaps, and lent it a bit of harshness, but in a chairman, Bailey thought, that might help rather than hinder. Fastolf went through the full ritual of greeting, exchanged stroking remarks without meaning, and offered food and drink. Through all of this, no mention was made of the outsider, and no notice was taken of him. It was only when the preliminaries were finished, and when all were seated, that Bailey, a little farther from the center than the others, was introduced. He said, "Mr. Chairman," without holding out his hand. And with an offhand nod, he said, "And of course I have met Dr. Amadiro." Amadiro's smile did not waver at the touch of insolence in Bailey's voice. The chairman, who had not acknowledged Bailey's greeting, placed his hands on each knee, fingers spread apart, and said, "Let us get started, and let us see if we can't make this as brief and as productive as possible. Let me stress first that I wish to get past this matter of the misbehavior or possible misbehavior of an Earthman, and strike instantly to the heart of the matter. Nor in dealing with the heart of the matter are we speaking of this overblown matter of the robot. Disrupting the activity of a robot is a matter for the civil courts. It can result in a judgment of the infringement of property rights and the inflicting of a penalty of costs, but nothing more than that. What's more, if it should be proved that Dr. Fastolf had rendered the robot, Gender Panel, inoperable, it is a robot who, after all, he helped design, whose construction he supervised, and the ownership of whom he held at the time of the inoperability. No penalty is likely to apply, since a person may do what he likes with his own. What is really at issue is the matter of the exploration and settlement of the galaxy, whether we of Aurora carry it through alone, whether we do it in collaboration with the other spacer worlds, or whether we leave it to Earth. Dr. Amadiro and the globalists favor having Aurora shoulder the burden alone. Dr. Fastolf wishes to leave it to Earth. If we can settle this matter, then the affair of the robot can be left to the civil courts, and the question of the Earthman's behavior will probably become moot, and we can simply get rid of him. Therefore, let me begin by asking whether Dr. Amadiro is prepared to accept Dr. Fastolf's position in order to achieve unity of decision, or whether Dr. Fastolf is prepared to accept Dr. Amadiro's position with the same end in view. He paused and waited. Amadiro said, "I am sorry, Mr. Chairman, but I must insist that Earthmen be confined to their planet and that the galaxy be settled by Aurorans only. I would be willing to compromise, however, to the extent of allowing other spacer worlds to share in the settlement, if that would prevent needless strife among us."
"I see," said the chairman. "Will you, Dr. Fastolf, in view of this statement, abandon your position?"
Fastolf said, "Dr. Amadiro's compromise has scarcely anything of substance in it, Mr. Chairman. I am willing to offer a compromise of greater significance. Why should not the worlds of the galaxy be thrown open to spacers and Earth people alike? The galaxy is large, and there would be room for both. I would be willing to accept such an arrangement."
"No doubt," said Amadiro quickly, "for it is no compromise. The over 8 billion population of Earth is more than half again the population of all the spacer worlds combined. Earth's people are short-lived, and are used to replacing their losses quickly. They lack our regard for individual human life. They will swarm over the new worlds at any cost, multiplying like insects, and will preempt the galaxy even while we are making a bare beginning. To offer Earth a supposedly equal chance of the galaxy is to give them the galaxy, and that is not equality. Earth people must be confined to Earth."
"And what have you to say to that, Dr. Fastolf?" asked the chairman.
Fastolf sighed. "My views are on record. I'm sure I don't need to repeat them. Dr. Amadiro plans to use humaniform robots to build the settled worlds that human Aurorans will then enter ready-made. Yet he doesn't even have humaniform robots. He cannot construct them, and the project would not work even if he did have them. No compromise is possible unless Dr. Amadiro consents to the principle that Earth people may at least share in the task of the settlement of new worlds." Then no compromise is possible, said Amadiro. The chairman looked displeased.
I'm afraid that one of you two must give in. I do not intend Aurora to be torn apart in an emotional orgy on a question this important.
He looked at Amadiro blankly, his expression carefully signifying neither favor nor disfavor.
You intend to use the inoperability of the robot Jander as an argument against Fastolf's view, do you not?
I do, said Amadiro.
A purely emotional argument. You are going to claim that Fastolf is trying to destroy your view by falsely making humaniform robots appear less useful than they in effect are.
That is exactly what he is trying to do. Slander,
put in Fastolf in a low voice.
Not if I can prove it, which I can, said Amadiro. The argument may be an emotional one, but it will be effective. You see that, Mr. Chairman, don't you?
My view will surely win, but left to itself it will be messy. I would suggest that you persuade Dr. Fastolf to accept inevitable defeat and spare Aurora the enormous sadness of a spectacle that will weaken our position among the spacer worlds and shake our own belief in ourselves.
How can you prove that Dr. Fastolf rendered the robot inoperative?
He himself admits he is the only human being who could have done so. You know this.
I know, said the chairman, but I wanted to hear you say this, not to your constituency, not to the media, but to me in private, and you have done so.
He turned to Fastolf.
And what do you say, Dr. Fastolf? Are you the only man who could have destroyed the robot?
Without leaving physical marks, I am, as far as I know. I don't believe that Dr. Amadiro has the skill in robotics to do so. And I am constantly amazed that after having founded his robotics institute, he is so eager to proclaim his own incapacity, even with all his associates at his back, and to do so publicly.
He smiled at Amadiro, not entirely without malice. The chairman sighed.
No, Dr. Fastolf, no rhetorical tricks now. Let us dispense with sarcasm and clever thrusts. What is your defense?
Why, only that I did no harm to Jander. I do not say anyone did. It was chance. The uncertainty principle at work on the positronic pathways. It can happen every so often. Let Dr. Amadiro merely admit that it was chance, that no one be accused without evidence, and we can then argue the competing proposals about settlement on their own merits.
No, said Amadiro. The chance of accidental destruction is too small to be considered, far smaller than the chance that Dr. Fastolf is responsible. So much smaller that to ignore Dr. Fastolf's guilt is irresponsible. I will not back down, and I will win.
Mr. Chairman, you know I will win. And it seems to me that the only rational step to be taken is to force Dr. Fastolf to accept his defeat in the interest of global unity.
Fastolf said quickly,
And that brings me to the matter of the investigation I have asked Mr. Bailey of Earth to undertake.
And Amadiro said just as quickly,
A move I opposed when it was first suggested. The Earthman may be a clever investigator, but he is unfamiliar with Aurora, and can accomplish nothing here. Nothing, that is, except to strew slander, and to hold Aurora up to the spacer worlds in an undignified and ridiculous light. There have been satirical pieces on the matter in half a dozen important spacer hyperwave news programs on as many different worlds. Recordings of these have been sent to your office.
And have been brought to my attention, said the chairman.
And there has been murmuring here on Aurora, Amadiro drove on. It would be to my selfish interest to allow the investigation to continue. It is costing Fastolf support among the populace and votes among the legislators. The longer it continues, the more certain I am of victory. But it is damaging Aurora, and I do not wish to add to my certainty at the cost of harm to my world. I suggest with respect that you end the investigation, Mr. Chairman, and persuade Dr. Fastolf to submit gracefully now to what he will eventually have to accept at much greater cost.
The chairman said, I agree that to have permitted Dr. Fastolf to set up this investigation may have been unwise. I say may. I admit I am tempted to end it, and yet the Earthman,
he gave no indication of knowing that Bailey was in the room,
has already been here for some time.
He paused, as though to give Fastolf a chance for corroboration, and Fastolf took it, saying,
This is the third day of his investigation, Mr. Chairman.
In that case, said the chairman, Before I end that investigation, it would be fair, I believe, to ask if there have been any significant findings so far.
He paused again. Fastolf glanced quickly at Bailey and made a small motion of his head. Bailey said in a low voice,
I do not wish, Mr. Chairman, to obtrude unasked any observations. Am I being asked a question?
The chairman frowned. Without looking at Bailey, he said,
I am asking Mr. Bailey of Earth to tell us whether he has any findings of significance.
Bailey took a deep breath. This was it. 76.
Mr. Chairman,
he began.
Yesterday afternoon I was interrogating Dr. Amadiro, who was most cooperative and useful to me. When my staff and I left...
Your staff? Asked the chairman.
I was accompanied by two robots on all phases of my investigation, Mr. Chairman,
said Bailey.
Robots who belong to Dr. Fastolf? Asked Amadiro.
I ask this for the record. For the record, they do, said Bailey. One is Daniil Olivaw, a humaniform robot, and the other is Giscard Reventlov, an older, non-humaniform robot.
Thank you, said the chairman. Continue.
When we left the Institute grounds, we found that the airfoil we used had been tampered with.
Tampered with? Asked the chairman, startled.
By whom?
We don't know, but it happened on Institute grounds. We were there by invitation, so it was known by the Institute personnel that we would be there. Moreover, no one else would be likely to be there without the invitation and knowledge of the Institute staff. If it were at all thinkable, it would be necessary to conclude that the tampering could only have been done by someone on the Institute staff, and that would in any case be impossible, except at the direction of Dr. Amadiro himself, which would also be unthinkable.
Amadiro said, You seem to think a great deal about the unthinkable. Has the airfoil been examined by a qualified technician to see if it has indeed been tampered with? Might there not have been a natural failing? Asked Amadiro.
No, sir, said Bailey. But Giscard, who is qualified to drive an airfoil, and who has frequently driven that particular one, maintains that it was tampered with.
And he is one of Dr. Fastolf's staff, and is programmed by him and receives his daily orders from him, said Amadiro. Are you suggesting... began Fastolf. I am suggesting nothing.
Amadiro held up his hand in a benign gesture.
I am merely making a statement for the record.
The chairman stirred.
Will Mr. Bailey of Earth please continue?
Bailey said, When the airfoil broke down, there were others in pursuit.
Others? Asked the chairman.
Other robots. They arrived, and by that time my robots were gone.
One moment, said Amadiro. What was your condition at the time, Mr. Bailey?
I was not entirely well.
Not entirely well? You are an Earthman and unaccustomed to life except in the artificial setting of your cities. You are uneasy in the open. Is that not so, Mr. Bailey?
Asked Amadiro.
Yes, sir.
And there was a severe thunderstorm in progress last evening, as I am sure the chairman recalls. Would it not be accurate to say that you were quite ill, semi-conscious, if not worse?
I was quite ill, said Bailey reluctantly.
Then how is it your robots were gone? Asked the chairman sharply. Should they not have been with you in your illness?
I ordered them away, Mr. Chairman.
Why?
I thought it best, said Bailey, and I will explain if I may be allowed to continue.
Continue.
We were indeed being pursued, for the pursuing robots arrived shortly after my robots had left. The pursuers asked me where my robots were, and I told them I had sent them away. It was only after that that they asked if I were ill. I said I wasn't ill, and they left me in order to continue a search for my robots.
In search of Daniil and Giscard? Asked the chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It was clear to me that they were under intense orders to find the robots.
In what way was that clear?
Although I was obviously ill, they asked about the robots before they asked about me. Then, later, they abandoned me in my illness to search for my robots. They must have received enormously intense orders to find those robots, or it would not have been possible for them to disregard a patently ill human being. As a matter of fact, I had anticipated this search for my robots, and that was why I had sent them away. I felt it all important to keep them out of unauthorized hands.
Amadiro said, Mr. Chairman, may I continue to question Mr. Bailey on this point, in order to show the worthlessness of this statement?
You may.
Amadiro said, Mr. Bailey, you were alone after your robots had left, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Therefore, you have no recording of events. You are not yourself equipped to record them. You have no recording device?
No, to all three, sir.
And you were ill?
Yes, sir.
Distraught, possibly too ill to remember clearly?
No, sir, I remember quite clearly.
You would think so, I suppose, but you may well have been delirious and hallucinating. Under those conditions, it seems clear that what the robots said, or indeed whether robots appeared at all, would seem highly dubious.
The chairman said thoughtfully,
I agree. Mr. Bailey of Earth, assuming that what you remember, or claim to remember, is accurate, what is your interpretation of the events you are describing?
I hesitate to give you my thoughts on the matter, Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, lest I slander the worthy Dr. Amadiro.
Since you speak at my request, and since your remarks are confined to this room,
the chairman looked around, the wall niches were empty of robots,
there is no question of slander, unless it seems to me you speak with malice.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, I had thought it possible that Dr. Amadiro detained me in his office by discussing matters with me at greater length than was perhaps necessary, so that there would be time for the damaging of my machine, then detained me further, in order that I might leave after the thunderstorm had begun, thus making sure that I would be ill in transit. He had studied Earth's social conditions, as he told me several times, so he would know what my reaction to the storm might be. It seemed to me that it was his plan to send his robots after us, and when they came upon our stalled airfoil, to have them take us all back to the Institute grounds, presumably so that I might be treated for my illness, but actually so that he might have Dr. Fastolf's robots.
Amadiro laughed gently.
What motive am I supposed to have for all this? You see, Mr. Chairman, that this is supposition joined to supposition and would be judged slander in any court on Aurora.
The chairman said severely,
Has Mr. Bailey of Earth anything to support these hypotheses?
A line of reasoning, Mr. Chairman. The chairman stood up, at once losing some of his presence, since he scarcely unfolded to a greater than sitting height.
Let me take a short walk, so that I might consider what I have heard so far. I will be right back.
He left for the personal. Fastolf leaned in the direction of Bailey, and Bailey met him halfway. Amadiro looked on in casual unconcern, as though it scarcely mattered to him what they might have to say to each other. Fastolf whispered,
Have you anything better to say?
Bailey said, I think so, if I get the proper chance to say it. But the chairman does not seem to be sympathetic.
He is not. So far you have merely made things worse, and I would not be surprised if, when he comes back, he calls these proceedings to a halt.
Bailey shook his head and stared at his shoes.
77. Bailey was still staring at his shoes when the chairman returned, reseated himself, and turned a hard and rather baleful glance at the Earthman. He said, Mr. Bailey of Earth?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I think you are wasting my time, but I do not want it said that I did not give either side a full hearing, even when it seemed to be wasting my time. Can you offer me a motive that would account for Dr. Amadiro acting in the mad way in which you accuse him of acting?
Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, in a tone approaching desperation, there is indeed a motive, a very good one. It rests on the fact that Dr. Amadiro's plan for settling the galaxy will come to nothing if he and his institute cannot produce humaniform robots. So far, he has produced none, and can produce none. Ask him if he is willing to have a legislative committee examine his institute for any indication that successful humaniform robots are being produced or designed. If he is willing to maintain that successful humaniforms are on the assembly lines, or even on the drawing boards, or even an adequate theoretical formulation, and if he is prepared to demonstrate that fact to a qualified committee, I will say nothing more and admit that my investigation has achieved nothing.
He held his breath. The chairman looked at Amadiro, whose smile had faded. Amadiro said,
I will admit that we have no humaniform robots in prospect at the moment.
Then I will continue, said Bailey, resuming his interrupted breathing with something very much like a gasp. Dr. Amadiro can, of course, find all the information he needs for his project if he turns to Dr. Fastolf, who has the information in his head. But Dr. Fastolf will not cooperate in this matter.
No, I will not, murmured Fastolf. Under any conditions.
But, Mr. Chairman, Bailey continued, Dr. Fastolf is not the only individual who has the secret of the design and construction of humaniform robots.
No, said the chairman. Who else would know? Dr. Fastolf himself looks astonished at your comment, Mr. Bailey.
For the first time, he did not add, of Earth.
I am indeed astonished, said Fastolf. To my knowledge, I am certainly the only one. I don't know what Mr. Bailey means.
Amadeira said, with a small curling of the lip, I suspect Mr. Bailey doesn't know either. Bailey felt hemmed in. He looked from one to the other, and felt that not one of them, not one, was on his side. He said,
Isn't it true that any humaniform robot would know? Not consciously, perhaps, not in such a way as to be able to give instructions in the matter, but the information would surely be there within him, wouldn't it? If a humaniform robot was properly questioned, his answers and responses would betray his design and construction. Eventually, given enough time, and given questions properly framed, a humaniform robot would yield information that would make it possible to plan the design of other humaniform robots. To put it briefly, no machine can be of secret design if the machine itself is available for sufficiently intense study. Fastolf seemed struck.
I see what you mean, Mr. Bailey. And you are right. I had never thought of that.
With respect, Dr. Fastolf, said Bailey, I must tell you that, like all Aurorans, you have a peculiarly individualistic pride. You are entirely too satisfied with being the best roboticist, the only roboticist who can construct humaniforms, so you blind yourself to the obvious.
The chairman relaxed into a smile.
He has you there, Dr. Fastolf. I have wondered why you were so eager to maintain that you were the only one with the know-how to destroy Jander when that so weakened your political case. I see clearly now that you would rather have your political case go down than your uniqueness.
Fastolf chafed visibly. As for Amadeiro, he frowned and said, Has this anything to do with the problem in our discussion?
Yes, it does, said Bailey, his confidence rising. You cannot force any information from Dr. Fastolf directly. Your robots cannot be ordered to do him harm, to torture him into revealing his secrets, for instance. You can't harm him directly yourself against the protection of Dr. Fastolf by his staff. However, you can isolate a robot and have it taken by other robots when the human being present is too ill to take the necessary action to prevent you. All the events of yesterday afternoon were part of a quickly improvised plan to get your hands on Daniil. You saw your opportunity as soon as I insisted on seeing you at the Institute. If I had not sent my robots away, if I had not been just well enough to insist I was well and to send your robots in the wrong direction, you would have had him, and eventually you might have worked out the secret of humaniform robots by some long-sustained analysis of Daniil's behavior and responses.
Amadeiro said, Mr. Chairman, I protest. I have never heard slander so viciously expressed. This is all based on the fancies of an ill man. We don't know, and perhaps can't ever know, whether the airfoil was really damaged, and if it was, by whom. Whether robots really pursued the airfoil and really spoke to Mr. Bailey or not. He is merely piling inference on inference, all based on dubious testimony concerning events of which he is the only witness, and that at a time when he was half mad with fear and may have been hallucinating. None of this can stand up for one moment in a courtroom.
This is not a courtroom, Dr. Amadeiro, said the chairman, and it is my duty to listen to everything that may be germane to a question under dispute.
This is not germane, Mr. Chairman. It is a cobweb.
Yet it hangs together somehow. I do not seem to catch Mr. Bailey in a clear-cut illogicality. If one admits what he claims to have experienced, then his conclusions make a kind of sense. Do you deny all this, Dr. Amadeiro? The airfoil damage, the pursuit, the intention to appropriate the humaniform robot?
I do, absolutely. None of it is true, said Amadeiro.
It had been a noticeable while since he had smiled. The Earthman can produce a recording of our entire conversation, and no doubt he will point out that I was delaying him by speaking at length, by inviting him to tour the Institute, by inviting him to have dinner. But all that can equally well be interpreted as my stretching a point to be courteous and hospitable. I was misled by a certain sympathy I have for Earthmen, perhaps, and that's all there is to that. I deny his inferences, and nothing of what he says can stand up against my denial. My reputation is not such that a mere speculation can persuade anyone that I am the kind of devious plotter this Earthman says I am.
The chairman scratched at his chin thoughtfully and said, Certainly I am not of a mind to accuse you on the basis of what the Earthman has said so far. Mr. Bailey, if this is all you have, it is interesting but insufficient.
Is there anything more you have to say of substance? I warn you that if not, I have now spent all the time on this that I can afford to.
78.
Bailey said, There is but one more subject I wish to bring up, Mr. Chairman. You have perhaps heard of Gladia Del Mar, or Gladia Solaria. She calls herself simply Gladia. Yes, Mr. Bailey, said the chairman with a testy edge to his voice. I have heard of her. I have seen the hyperwave show in which you and she play such remarkable parts. She was associated with the robot janitor for many months. In fact, toward the end, he was her husband. The chairman's unfavorable stare at Bailey became a hard glare. Her what? Husband, Mr. Chairman. Fastoff, who half rose, sat down again, looking perturbed. The chairman said harshly, That is illegal. Worse, it is ridiculous. A robot could not impregnate her. There could be no children. The status of a husband or of a wife is never granted without some statement as to willingness to have a child, if permitted. Even an Earthman, I should think, would know that. Bailey said, I am aware of this, Mr. Chairman. So I am certain was Gladia. She did not use the word husband in its legal sense, but in an emotional one. She considered Jander the equivalent of a husband. She felt toward him as though he were a husband. The chairman turned to Fastoff. Did you know of this, Dr. Fastoff? He was a robot on your staff. Fastoff, clearly embarrassed, said, I knew she was fond of him. I suspected she made use of him sexually. I knew nothing of this illegal charade, however, until Mr. Bailey told me of it. Bailey said, She was a Solarian. Her concept of husband was not Auroran. Obviously not, said the chairman. But she did have enough of a sense of reality to keep it to herself, Mr. Chairman. She never told of this charade, as Dr. Fastoff calls it, to any Auroran. She told me the day before yesterday because she wanted to urge me on in the investigation of something that meant so much to her. Yet even so, I imagine she would not have used the word if she had not known I was an Earthman and would understand it in her sense and not in an Auroran's. Very well, said the chairman. I'll grant her a bare minimum of good sense for a Solarian. Is that the one more subject you wanted to bring up? Yes, Mr. Chairman. In that case, it is totally irrelevant and can play no part in our deliberations. Mr. Chairman, there is one question I must still ask. One question. A dozen words, sir, and then I will be through. He said it as earnestly as he could, for everything depended on this. The chairman hesitated. Agreed. One last question. Yes, Mr. Chairman. Bailey would have liked to bark out the words, but he refrained. Nor did he raise his voice. Nor did he even point his finger. Everything depended on this. Everything had led up to this. And yet he remembered Fastoff's warning and said it almost casually. How is it that Dr. Amadiro knew that Jander was Gladia's husband? What? The chairman's white and bushy eyebrows raised themselves in surprise. Who said he knew anything of this? Asked a direct question, Bailey could continue. Ask him, Mr. Chairman. And he merely nodded in the direction of Amadiro, who had risen from his seat and was staring at Bailey in obvious horror. 79. Bailey said again, very softly, reluctant to draw attention away from Amadiro, Ask him, Mr. Chairman. He seems upset. The chairman said, What is this, Dr. Amadiro? Did you know anything about the robot as supposed husband of this Solarian woman? Amadiro stuttered, then pressed his lips together for a moment and tried again. The paleness which had struck him had vanished and was replaced by a dull flush. He said, I am caught by surprise at this meaningless accusation, Mr. Chairman. I do not know what it is all about. May I explain, Mr. Chairman, very briefly? Said Bailey. Would he be cut off? You had better, said the chairman grimly. If you have any explanation, I would certainly like to hear it. Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, I had a conversation with Dr. Amadiro yesterday afternoon. Because it was his intention to keep me until the storm broke, he spoke more lengthily than he intended, and apparently more carelessly. In referring to Gladia, he casually referred to the robot Jander as her husband. I'm curious as to how he knew that fact. Is this true, Dr. Amadiro? Asked the chairman.
Amadeiro was still standing, bearing almost the appearance of a prisoner before a judge. He said, "Whether it is true or not has no bearing on the question in our discussion."
"Perhaps not," said the chairman. "But I was astonished at your reaction to the question when it was put. It occurs to me that there is a meaning to this that Mr. Bailey and you both understand, and that I do not. I, therefore, want to understand also. Did you or did you not know of this impossible relationship between Jander and the Solarian woman?"
Amadeiro said in a choking voice, "I could not possibly have."
"That is no answer," said the chairman. "That is an equivocation. You are making a judgment when I am asking you to hand me a memory. Did you or did you not make the statement imputed to you?"
"Before he answers," said Bailey, feeling more certain of his ground now that the chairman was governed by moral outrage, "it is only fair to Dr. Amadeiro for me to remind him that Giscard, a robot who was also present at the meeting, can, if asked to do so, repeat the entire conversation, word for word, using the voice and intonation of both parties. In short, the conversation is recorded."
Amadeiro burst into a kind of rage. "Mr. Chairman, the robot Giscard was designed, constructed, and programmed by Dr. Fastolf, who announces himself to be the best roboticist who exists and who is bitterly opposed to me. Can we trust a recording produced by such a robot?"
Bailey said, "Perhaps you ought to hear the recording and come to your own decision, Mr. Chairman." "Perhaps I ought," said the chairman. "I am not here, Dr. Amadeiro, to have my decisions made for me. But let us put that aside for a moment. Regardless of what the recording says, Dr. Amadeiro, do you wish to state for the record that you did not know that the Solarian woman considered her robot to be her husband and that you never referred to him as her husband? Please remember, as you both, being legislators, should, that although no robot is present, this entire conversation is being recorded in my own device." He tapped a small bulge at his breast pocket. "Flatly, then, Dr. Amadeiro, yes or no?"
Amadeiro said, with an edge of desperation in his voice, "Mr. Chairman, I honestly cannot remember what I said in casual conversation. If I did mention the word, and I don't admit I did, it may have been the result of some other casual conversation in which someone mentioned the fact that Gladia acted as love-struck toward her robot as though he were her husband."
The chairman said, "And with whom did you have this other casual conversation? Who made this statement to you?"
"At the moment, I cannot say."
Bailey said, "Mr. Chairman, if Dr. Amadeiro will be so kind as to list anyone and everyone who might have used the word to him, we can question every one of them to discover which one can remember making such a remark."
Amadeiro said, "I hope, Mr. Chairman, you will consider the effect on the morale of the Institute if anything of this sort is done."
The chairman said, "I hope you will consider it too, Dr. Amadeiro, and come up with a better answer to our question so that we are not forced to extremes."
"One moment, Mr. Chairman," said Bailey, as obsequiously as he could manage. "There remains a question."
"Again, another one?" The chairman looked at Bailey without favor. "What is it?"
"Why is Dr. Amadeiro struggling so to avoid admitting he knew of Jander's relation to Gladia? He says it is irrelevant. In that case, why not say he knew of the relationship and be done with it? I say it is relevant, and that Dr. Amadeiro knows that his admission could be used to demonstrate criminal activity on his part."
Amadeiro thundered, "I resent the expression, and I demand an apology."
Fastolf smiled thinly, and Bailey's lips pressed together grimly. He had forced Amadeiro over the edge. The chairman turned an almost alarming red and said with passion,
You demand? To whom do you demand? I am the chairman. I hear all views before deciding what to suggest is best to be done. Let me hear what the Earthman has to say about his interpretation of your action. If he is slandering you, he shall be punished, you may be sure. And I will take the broadest view of the slander statutes, too, you may be sure. But you, Amadeiro, may make no demands upon me. Go on, Earthman, say what you have to say, but be extraordinarily careful.
Bailey said, "Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, there is one Auroran to whom Gladia did tell the secret of her relationship with Jander." The chairman interrupted,
"Well, who is that? Do not play your hyperwave tricks on me."
Bailey said, "I have no intention of anything but a straightforward statement, Mr. Chairman. The one Auroran is, of course, Jander himself. He may have been a robot,
but he is an inhabitant of Aurora and might be viewed as an Auroran. Gladia must surely, in her passion, have addressed him as my husband. Since Dr. Amadiro has admitted he might possibly have heard from someone else some statement to the effect of Jander's husbandly relationship to Gladia, isn't it logical to suppose that he heard of the matter from Jander? Would Dr. Amadiro be willing right now to state for the record that he never spoke to Jander during the period when Jander formed part of Gladia's staff? Twice, Amadiro's mouth opened as though he would speak. Twice, he did not utter a sound. "Well," said the chairman, "did you speak to Jander during that period, Dr. Amadiro?" There was still no answer. Bailey said softly, "If he did, it is entirely relevant to the matter at hand."
"I'm beginning to see that it must be, Mr. Bailey. Well, Dr. Amadiro, once again, yes or no?"
And Amadiro burst forth, "What evidence does this Earthman have against me in this matter? Does he have a recording of any conversation I have had with Jander? Does he have witnesses who are willing to say they have seen me with Jander? What does he have anything at all besides mere self-serving statements?" The chairman turned to look at Bailey, and Bailey said, "Mr. Chairman, if I have nothing at all, then Dr. Amadiro should not hesitate to deny, for the record, any contact with Jander. But he does not do so. As it happens, in the course of my investigation, I spoke to Dr. Vasilia Aliena, the daughter of Dr. Fastolf. I spoke also to a young Auroran named Santirix Grimianus. In the recordings of both interviews, it will be plain that Dr. Vasilia encouraged Grimianus to pay court to Gladia. You may question Dr. Vasilia as to her purpose in so doing, and as to whether this course of action had been suggested to her by Dr. Amadiro. It also appears that it was Grimianus's custom to take long walks with Gladia, which both enjoyed, and on which they were not accompanied by the robot Jander. You might check on this, if you wish, sir." The chairman said dryly,
"I may do so, but if all is as you say, what does this show?"
Bailey said, "I have stated that, failing Dr. Fastolf himself, the secret of the humaniform robot could be obtained only from Daniil. Before Jander's death, it could, with equal facility, have been obtained from Jander. Whereas Daniil was part of Dr. Fastolf's establishment, and could not easily be reached, Jander was part of Gladia's establishment, and she was not as sophisticated as Dr. Fastolf in seeing to a robot's protection. Isn't it likely that Dr. Amadiro took the occasion of Gladia's periodic absences from her establishment, when she was walking with Grimianus, to converse with Jander, perhaps by trimensional viewing, to study his responses, to subject him to various tests, and then to erase any sign of his visit with Jander so that he could never inform Gladia of it? It may be that he came close to finding what he wanted to know before the attempt ended when Jander went out of action. His concentration then shifted to Daniil. He felt perhaps that he had only a few tests and observations left to make, and so he set up the trap of yesterday evening, as I said earlier in my testimony." The chairman said, in what was almost a whisper, "Now it all hangs together. I am almost forced to believe. Plus one final point, and then I will truly have nothing more to say," said Bailey. "In his examination and testing of Jander, it is entirely possible that Dr. Amadiro accidentally, and without any deliberate intention whatever, immobilized Jander, and thus committed roboticide." And Amadiro, maddened, shouted, "No, never! Nothing I did to that robot could possibly have immobilized him." Fastolf interposed, "I agree. Mr. Chairman, I too think that Dr. Amadiro did not immobilize Jander. However, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Amadiro's statement just now would seem an implicit admission that he was working with Jander, and that Mr. Bailey's analysis of the situation is essentially accurate." The chairman nodded.
"I am forced to agree with you, Dr. Fastolf. Dr. Amadiro, you may insist on a formal denial of all this, and that may force me into a full-fledged investigation, which could do you a great deal of damage, however it turned out. And I rather suspect at this stage it is likely to turn out to your great disadvantage. My suggestion is that you do not force this, that you do not cripple your own position in the legislature and perhaps cripple Aurora's ability to continue along a smooth political course. As I see it,
Before the matter of Jander's immobilization came up, Dr. Fastoff had a majority of the legislators, not a large majority, admittedly, on his side in the matter of galactic settlement. You would have swung enough legislators to your side by pushing the matter of Dr. Fastoff's supposed responsibility for Jander's immobilization, and thus have gained the majority. But now Dr. Fastoff, if he wishes, can turn the tables by accusing you of the immobilization, and moreover, of having tried to hang a false accusation upon your opponent as well, and you would lose. If I do not interfere, then it may be that you, Dr. Amadeiro, and you, Dr. Fastoff, actuated by stubbornness or even vindictiveness, will both marshal your forces and accuse each other of all sorts of things. Our political forces and public opinion, too, will be hopelessly divided, even fragmented to our infinite harm. I believe that in that case, Fastoff's victory, while inevitable, would be a very costly one. So that it would be my task as the chairman to swing the votes in his direction to begin with, and to place pressure upon you and your faction, Dr. Amadeiro, to accept Fastolf's victory with as much grace as you can manage, and to do it right now, for the good of Aurora. Fastolf said,
I am not interested in a crushing victory, Mr. Chairman. I propose again a compromise, whereby Aurora, the other spacer worlds, and Earth, too, all have the freedom of settlement in the galaxy. In return, I will be glad to join the Robotics Institute, put my knowledge of humaniform robots at its disposal, and thus facilitate Dr. Amadeiro's plan in return for his solemn agreement to abandon all thought of retaliation against Earth at any time in the future, and to put this into treaty form with ourselves and Earth as signatories.
The chairman nodded. A wise and statesmanlike suggestion. May I have your acceptance of this, Dr. Amadeiro?
Amadeiro now sat down. His face was a study in defeat. He said, I have not wanted personal power or the satisfaction of victory. I wanted what I know to be best for Aurora, and I am convinced that this plan of Dr. Fastolf's means an end to Aurora someday. However, I recognize that I am now helpless against the work of this Earthman. He shot a quick, venomous glance toward Bailey.
And I am forced to accept Dr. Fastolf's suggestion, though I will ask for permission to address the legislature on the subject and to state for the record my fears of the consequences.
We will, of course, allow that, said the chairman. And if you'll be guided by me, Dr. Fastolf, you'll get this Earthman off our world as fast as possible. He has won your viewpoint for you. But it will not be a very popular one if Aurorans have too long a time to brood over it as an earthly victory over Aurorans.
You are quite right, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Bailey will be gone quickly, with my thanks, and I trust with yours as well.
Well, said the chairman, not with the best of grace, since his ingenuity has saved us from a bruising political battle, he has my thanks. Thank you, Mr. Bailey.